perfect. It is understood herein that Adharma, irreligion, was also a son of Brahma, and he married his sister Mrsha. This is the beginning of sex life between brother and sister. This unnatural combination of sex life can be possible in human society only where there is adharma or irreligion. It is understood that in the beginning of creation, Brahma created not only saintly sons like Sanaka, Sanatana and Narada, but also demoniac offspring like Nirruti, Adharma, Dhamba and falsity. Everything was created by Brahma in the beginning. Regarding Narada, it is understood that because his previous life was very pious and his association very good, he was born as Narada. Others were also born in their own capacities according to their backgrounds. The law of karma continues birth after birth, and when there is a new creation, the same karma comes back with the living entities. They are born in different capacities according to karma, even though their father is originally Brahma. Even though their father is originally Brahma, who is the exalted qualitative Brahma. Incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God?
Brahma means the Supreme Absolute Truth. It's a different word, Brahma. I just redeemed this translation for the recording. Another son of Lord Brahma was irreligion, whose wife's name was falsity. From their combination were born two demons named Dambha, or bluffing, and Maya, or cheating. These two demons were taken by a demon named Nirriti, who had no children. The purpose of the creation of the material world is two, of course, manifold, but specifically twofold. One is to give the opportunity to those who are envious of Krishna to indulge in that envy and forgetfulness of Krishna, and thus not disturb Vaikuntha by making it into Sakuntha. In other words, not to make Vaikuntha into New York City or Bombay, or Salem for that matter. Vaikuntha means the place with no anxiety, and this material world means the place of anxiety. And the other purpose is to, that's actually the main purpose, but then, otherwise there wouldn't be any need of any material world if it wasn't for the deliberate forgetfulness of the jivas of Krishna. The deliberate forgetfulness of Krishna, of the jivas, is a more accurate way to put that. By the jivas, yeah. And because Krishna loves all his pats and parcels, the jivas, he also tries to make a situation or creates a situation in which the jivas can be reformed from their wicked propensity of forgetting Krishna. Those who at least take to the reformatory process, they follow dharma. And those who don't, they are out-and-out demons. So, here is discussed adharma, irreligion.
Inge adharma, adharmata patti chollapadudhu.
Now, it's interesting that English word irreligion, it's the antonym of religion, just as adharma is the antonym of dharma. And just like religion doesn't exactly correspond to the word dharma, so irreligion also doesn't exactly correspond to the word adharma. So religion means, its predominant meaning is a system of faith in God. But irreligion and atheism, they have different meanings. The meaning of irreligion in English is more like adharma. It's closer to adharma than the word religion is closer to dharma. Irreligion gives the sense of wanton living, sinful living, which is the point that's being described in this series of verses, beginning with this one, I believe. Yeah. The offspring of adharma. From adharma, well, adharma immediately teams up with falsity. Mrsha, that literally means falsity. So they go together very well. They're made for each other. They cannot live without each other. Husband and wife. There cannot be adharma without falsity. To follow the injunctions of the Supreme Truth, Absolute Personality of Godhead. So adharma begins with denying the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It begins with denying the Supreme Truth and accepting the untruth, Ishvar Aham. Aham bhogi, that not that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and Enjoyer, but I am. So we can say, well, adharma is married to falsity, but marriage itself is a religious function, a dharmic function. This marriage is a marriage between brother and sister. So it's adharma marries falsity, and it has a false show of being dharmic. It's not that if you put two negatives together, you get positive. This is not multiplication. You get more negative. And from this unnatural combination of sex life comes more unnatural combination of sex life. In the Western world, there is, it's very commonly, it's widely accepted by almost everyone, it seems, that homosexuality is fine. If you want, it's okay. This is only possible because of adharma. In India also, all these things are coming. Already the atmosphere of dharma is much vitiated, is a word Prabhupada might have used that. You can imagine what it means. It means spoiled. And there is active propaganda for adharma, especially in the field of illicit sex. You'll see, and I've been seeing, when I see the newspapers, it's common in India that they have articles saying why, what's wrong with women not married, having children, and so on. So far it hasn't caught on very quickly, this idea, this particular idea. Maybe one reason is because they don't have social welfare as they do in the Western countries. Even in the West, until a short time ago, it was considered something very wrong for women, not unmarried women, to have children. But then some well-intentioned person started pointing out in the newspapers that, you know, there are girls like that, and they're not bad girls, and it wasn't their fault, really. And, you know, they're suffering, everyone dislikes them, and the children are suffering, and we should do something to help them. It's only a few, and why should they suffer? And why should the children suffer? It's not their fault. So the government started giving them welfare, which means money, taxpayers' money. And the supervenient effect of that, you've been reading my book, you should know what that word means. Unexpected, unintended result of that was, the women started thinking, hey, I don't need a husband, I can have kids without a husband, I'll get money from the government, and it's become a normal thing. This topic, the way I'm discussing this now, that would not be allowed to be broadcast on television in the Western world. And if I was giving this lecture in a public place, then I probably wouldn't have got this far. So I've been shouted down or possibly physically attacked. Because adharma is such that even to suggest in the Western world that there is something wrong with women who don't get married but they have children anyway, that is considered adharma. Once in England, I was in someone's home, and as usual, people have TVs on, running. So there's some program being broadcast from America. It was an American program. as you can tell by the accent, in which they broadcast a debate between a young Christian couple and a young homosexual couple, men. And it was in a hall or a studio. There were a lot of people present also. And the Christian couple were saying, it's wrong. Homosexuality is wrong. And whatever they said, the audience just jeered them and laughed at them and booed them. And then the young Christian asked one of the men, that one of the homosexual men, that, well, what does your mother think of this? And the guy said that, well, my mother doesn't mind. She never complained, and you know, she accepts me as her son, and everyone cheered. And what can you do, actually? I mean, in America earlier this year, I was staying with one of my godbrothers and godsisters who are married. And she had one or two sons from a previous marriage, from before she'd become a devotee. And actually Prabhupada allowed that, it seems. Or it was like when people joined the movement in the West, it was like, you know, new start or something like that. I mean, if you said in the West that all the men should only marry virgins, it was impossible. There are no virgins. There are no virgins. Especially Prabhupada's disciples. I mean, there might have been a few virgins here and there, but not in the Western world. I mean, Prabhupada's followers, they were mostly from the hippie background, and the first motto of the hippies was free sex. So that woman's son was going to visit that day, and I asked, well, is he interested in Krishna consciousness? And her husband said, no, he's a homosexual. Of course, homosexuals can also be interested in Krishna consciousness. But although both of them are very serious devotees, if her son is a homosexual, what can you do? She gives him prasadam, she doesn't get on his case, because what can you do? So I see on the faces here looks of dismay and, what should we say, disappointed surprise. I just got one of my godbrothers sent me a report from the BBC in England. Everyone knows the word BBC. About how it's a very widespread social problem nowadays that women, they go in gangs drinking and then they attack people in public. And they seriously attack them in bottles and all kinds of things, because women are equal to men. And in England, for many years, it's nothing new, it's been a common pastime that people get drunk and then they just go and attack people. Men do, but now the women, they have equal rights, so they're doing the same thing. But that wasn't a BBC comment, that was my comment. Well, they brought in the adharma of women's equality. There you go. There's the one of the consequences. Another one is 12-year-old alcoholics. Alcoholics. I don't know what the Tamil word is. Is that common in Croatia when you were young? You usually started about, what, 15, 16, something like that? Not 12, yeah. No, actually they found out, that there was one boy who was reported, he was found out when he was carried home, but actually been an alcoholic for several years before that. Because his mother is, you know, she's out working. She's not supervising. About 12 years ago, I was relating to a devotee couple who are living in India. They're from America. I was telling them something I'd also did. Today's class is the following. There's a class from the newspaper. So I was relating how I just come back from England, and in the newspaper I saw that at that time it was a problem of young girls aged about 13 or 14 killing people. You know, they'd like knock on an old woman's door and then she'd open it and they'd kill her and take away her £10 or whatever and use it for buying drugs. And they said, well, you know, in America that's been normal for years. There's nothing new for us. England's behind. It's not so advanced. So these are horrible subjects. You may wonder why we're discussing them in Srimad Bhagavatam class. Well, that is the subject of the class today. And as I was joking, this is a class from the newspaper. But that's where you get the news of a dharma. Today we're discussing adharma, not dharma. But if we want to know about dharma, then we have to go to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. This is the statement of the Bhagavatam, that dharma is that enunciated by the Supreme Lord. And if we want to know about adharma in detail, then we have to go to the just take a walk. the point that's being made here in Srimad Bhagavatam is amplified in the newspaper. Everything follows one after the other. If there's a dharma, there must be falsity, bluffing. Here, dhamma is translated as bluffing, cheating, and then we'll see in the next verse comes greed, cunning, anger, violence, harsh words, durukti. How is it? Harsh speech, it's translated. And Kali, who is the personality of all bad qualities. And it all begins with a natural combination of sex life. And from that comes all bad things. Dharma bhibhavat Krishna pradushyanti Striya, what is it? Pradushyanti? Striya? Kulastriya. Kulastriya, yeah. Kulastriya. Strishu dushtashu varshaya jayate varnasankara. This is Arjuna's analysis. A dharma will arise when the cultured women or the women of cultured families are polluted. And then will come children born of a dharma who themselves are Varnasankara. Srila Prabhupada translates this as unwanted children. And from Varnasankara, is it not Shankara? Maybe in Tamil it's Shankara. No, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's in Bengali everything's Shah. So words change in different languages. Yeah, and then from them comes more adharma. So each generation becomes worse and worse and worse. And we're practically seeing in the world this, how this is so. Among devotees, we see that each generation says the next generation is worse. And, I mean, significantly worse. The present generation of devotees find it very difficult to deal with the in the West, they find it very difficult to preach to the young people because their minds are so disturbed. Most of them never had proper families. They might have been brought up by their bisexual mother or something like that. Do you know what bisexual means? No. It means that they have sex with men and with women. Oh. Women. I don't know. I never worked out how lesbians have sex, but I'm... But anyway, it means that both ACDC, as they say. Well, to be fair, most women in the West are not lesbians to date. Not yet. Yeah. But most children, they don't have a fixed family. Even if they're raised with their biological father, he may be openly having another girlfriend or they get divorced and they get married again, or, you know, it's just a circus. Many are raised by their mothers, so they don't hardly ever see their fathers, and they, you know, every week they see their mother with a different boyfriend. And then they're on the internet, they're all bad things on the internet is their entertainment. And at school they learn how to, primary school, they learn how to drink and smoke and have sex. The minds are very disturbed. And in India also, increasingly, that's normal in school. They have boyfriend, girlfriend. And practically we see that the minds of such children become very disturbed. So it all begins, this adharma and all the bad things that follow, it all begins from looseness in sex. Arjuna was talking about the kulastriya, the women of cultured families, how they, if they become polluted. So there was what is nowadays referred to the caste system. And marriages were arranged, not just on the basis of caste, but that was essential. And we see up to the present day that although everyone's a Shudra, but still there's, you can say those of Brahmin caste, they tend to be somewhat more cultured Shudras. And, or at least we can say that it's a different, they have a different culture at home to those who are in a different caste. We often see that in love marriages that they marry from different castes and they don't really fit together that well. So in previous days, I mean, the caste really meant something. There was a whole different kind of training. And the castes, they observed the dharma according to the varna dharma. They observed that very strictly. Later they lost the understanding of why they should be doing that. And it just, the whole thing became, corrupted into a caste system without any higher motive.
Right.
But we see that, just like for instance here in the Bhagavatam first canto, we'll find with the birth of Parikshit Maharaj, how the elders of the family were very concerned that he would be a worthy member of the family. It is the duty of everyone born in the body of a man to produce children. This is to pay the debt to his forefathers. This Manu states that, what is that? Putrarte kriyate bharya. It is the one marries for the sake of having a son. Putra pinda prayojanam, and the son is required so that he can offer pinda for the sake of delivering the forefathers. Arjuna was also saying this, the varna sangra born and then lupta pinda odaka. Then they'll stop offering the pinda, the rice balls, to the and the water to the forefathers. But it's not just any son born in any way. It was a whole science of producing good children. You see, the Pandavas were very concerned that Parikshit Maharaj would be a worthy descendant of their family. It was the duty of the Kshatriyas to bring forth more Kshatriyas so that they could perform the duties of Kshatriyas in society. So like that in all the castes, they wanted to bring forth children who could contribute to society by the unique qualities that have been handed down from generation to generation. In that, now all these things are lost and forgotten. That one of the products of adharma is confusion, ignorance. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish, for the benefit of society, he wanted to bring in varnashram dharma. When we say this among devotees, they think, farm. But it's a lot more than growing vegetables. That's the relatively easy part. Establishing dharma in a society where people have absolutely no idea of what is dharma, that's the difficult part. Although in Bhagavatam class we want to hear about the Nam Rup Gun Lila, the name, forms, qualities and pastimes of Krishna, that has not been discussed even slightly in this class. It's going to be very difficult to begin to appreciate the Nam, Rup, Guna and Leela of Krishna if our minds are completely disturbed and confused and we're full of ignorance. So, therefore it is required to establish dharma in society. Varnashram dharma means there has to be dharma. That is a great challenge. It is relatively easy, and it's also not easy, but it's relatively easy to establish or to get people to chant Harinam. But to have people understand dharma and follow that, even among devotees, seems to be very difficult. So on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, we need to discuss these things and understand. Here we're talking about, of course, the param dharma, or the actual dharma of every living entity is to serve Krishna. But it's for the sake of making society more sane so that we can serve Krishna in a better way, it's required to bring some sanity in, and that begins with dharma. It's going to be very difficult to bring Krishna consciousness into a society in which gangs of women go around and smash people in the face with broken bottles. I heard Mata. Yeah, they're not really like mothers. That's a very gross manifestation of a dharma. Of course, by the next generation, that might not be a gross manifestation. That might just be, you know, normal. It's like one of the women who was arrested for doing that. She said, "Well, you know, it's just," she said like that, "it's normal. You see, and you see it on TV all the time. And my father was always fighting with his girlfriend. I was always fighting with my mother. And you know, it's just the way I lived all my life. So, you know, what's the big thing?" But actually, every aspect of society is simply a manifestation of society as it is today is a manifestation of adharma. When I'm in the village in India and I see the girls coming home from school, I see adharma. You see all the cows grazing, and you know they're all going to be slaughtered. What percentage of cows in India live their full life? I would think it's probably less than 2%. The ones that make it over to Dalmia's Goshala, they have over there. The ones that make it to a Goshala, some Jain Goshala or Marwari Goshala, otherwise all of them, they're all slaughtered. If in the whole of India one cow is slaughtered, it's a disaster. I mean, we can't expect any fortune for the whole country. Daily tens of thousands are either slaughtered or a few of them are taken live over the border to Bangladesh and Pakistan, and they don't go to a Goshala, that's for sure. What is dharma? People should know that education is required. Mm. All right, any question about this?
And what is the actual difference between irreligion and atheism? Is it
in English?
In English, because atheism, I would say it's like...
Atheism means directly to deny that there is any God. And irreligion means... it's more like apathy, which manifests as... You have to look it up in a dictionary, but even in the dictionary they won't give a very precise definition. Because they're just... the job of the dictionary is to give a short definition. But from the apathy or uninterest in religion, then comes drunkenness and cheating and all this kind of thing. What would you say, Murari? You're a university graduate from London. What would you say? You ever think about that? I didn't think about it, actually, until I sat down here in the class. And today, this morning, I never really thought about the new. You could say it's a nuance. You might find that they're synonyms. If you find a thesaurus, you may find these two words as synonyms. But like most synonyms, there is a subtle difference between them. It's a bit difficult when we're talking about English, nuances of English words.
Maybe like impersonalism and Mayavada. One
way, yeah, maybe like that, yeah. Although there are, again, two different languages. But Mayavad doesn't, if you give the translation of Mayavad, of course it's very difficult to give a translation, because how do you translate Maya? But it literally means the doctrine of illusion. It doesn't mean impersonalism. Impersonalism is not an accurate translation of Mayavad, but linguistically it's not a translation, although practically Mayavad translates as impersonalism. The word translate in English doesn't mean just to translate, but it also means it gives this sense of something being a consequence of something else. So you could say Mayavad translates as impersonalism. Here we're getting into subtleties of English, which bring out different philosophical points, actually. And language, thought, and therefore philosophy, is embedded in, it's inseparable from language. Therefore, it's important to speak properly and know what you're saying and know what it means. Just like I said at the beginning of the class, what is that? Brahma, Brahma, that's pronunciation, that's one point. Then another point is saying that the forgetfulness of the jivas of Krishna, but then I changed it to the forgetfulness of Krishna of the jivas, which is more accurate. If you say the forgetfulness of the jivas of Krishna, it means Krishna's jivas forget. But if you say forgetfulness of Krishna by the jiva, in normal speaking you'd say like that and people would know what you mean, but in writing you'd have to put forgetfulness of Krishna by the jivas, which is accurate. You may remember I corrected myself. Or it could mean either way, forgetfulness of Krishna, of the jivas of Krishna. It would be ambiguous.
Here, here it's explained. The sex life between the
brother and sister. Yeah, well, what can you do when there's, you know, there's nothing but brother and sister, is there, in the beginning? Swayambhuva Manu did the same thing. You're going to ask about Swayambhuva Manu? There's nothing else to do. Brahma, he also married his daughter, but there's no one else. But the union of Swayambhuva and Shatarupa, that's dharmic. And the union of Adharma and Mrisha, that's adharmic. One got blessings, the others didn't, I guess. And Brahma, first of all, when he was interested in his daughter, that was considered very bad. And later he married her and that's considered okay. So that's something else which would have to be Shastra research. Need our Shastric research on how one is considered all right and another isn't. But again, it would seem for which purpose they married. For which purpose did Swayambhuva and Shatarupa marry? And then for what purpose did Adharma and Mrisha? How did they marry also? They probably didn't go through any of the authorized processes. Gandhava is the loosest. Gandhava. But that's also a system of marriage. It's not, the responsibility is taken to execute dharma. It's not exactly, Gandhava Vivaha is not exactly the same as what we call today love marriage. It's not exactly the same thing. Paishach, that's maybe the worst. Which one? Well, there's one called Rakshasa. But that's stealing the Chacha Krishna did that. But of course he's not a Rakshasa. Stealing the girl from the Kshatriyas do that. Paishach means you get her drunk. I don't know if they actually marry or what. But I guess afterwards they feel obliged to, society would oblige them to marry. Hare Krishna.